You're listening to Strictly Business Podcast with Lindsay Williams.
This edition of It's My Money is brought to you by Brenthurst Wealth, your partner for global wealth creation. Welcome to It's My Money. It's My Money is brought to you by Brenthurst Wealth, South Africa's multi-award winning boutique wealth manager. With me today is Aaron Ruttenberg. Now, Aaron has written me this piece, which is headlined as follows. You are likely the reason your investments have underperformed. So he's shifting blame already. But more seriously, he goes on to say, I was sitting and writing this article while drinking a coffee on a crisp Johannesburg morning when I received a call from a client of mine. And the client said the following, I have my eyes on the FANG and AI stocks. And then, of course, Aaron thinks, well, you should have done that a couple of years ago. But anyway, Aaron can tell the full story. This cup of coffee obviously stimulated you in many different ways, Aaron.
Good afternoon, Lindsay, and to your listeners. It did indeed. In fact, it got me, you know, it got me all riled up, especially. And that's when my creative juices start flowing. And I thought, no, it's time to shift the blame and explain that, no, you are the reason for your underperformance.
Yeah, human beings are fragile characters. They like to be in charge of their own destiny, especially when it goes well. And then they say, well, I did this. And then when it goes badly, they can shift it to their financial advisor. I'm being very general here with my tongue firmly in my cheek, but it is a problem, isn't it? This is what interests me about a company like Brenthurst. How do you manage someone who's hell bent on doing something that you maybe don't want them to do?
That's the difficulty, because you know, at the end of the day, what our job is actually to manage that type of behavior. Whilst we need to know as financial advisors or wealth managers what's going on in the market and make sure to diversify client portfolios in line with their risk profile and their time horizons and their unique sets of or their unique standards, it's important that they, the clients, understand that we are not the portfolio managers. So when we're diversifying them, we're doing it for their benefit, like I've mentioned, across all those various factors. But what's underlying there within each portfolio manager that has a specific role to play, for example, a portfolio manager that's invested in global equity, there might be one that's invested in local fixed income like bonds and cash. Their job is to focus on that, right? And your job is to make sure you're diversifying across these people. They don't dictate what the markets do, but there's a lot of work going on within these unit trusts, within these exchange traded funds, that the client doesn't see. And what they also don't see, and that's the point, is, you know, how portfolios are constructed. And that's why there's an actual art of behavior, psychology mixed with personal finance or economics, known as, you know, investor psychology and or behavioral psychology for investments. And it's a whole study in itself, which really looks at human beings and the decisions they make, which is also interlinked to how they think about money and how they think about change, and it happens very quickly.
I've always thought that investors are headline readers. Again, that's a sweeping generalization, Aaron, but I believe that they look at a headline, they say this, 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 and this, and with an exclamation mark, metaphorically or in reality, at the end of it, and people think, well, why am I not in this thing? Look how much NVIDIA has gone up, for example. And that gives them something called overconfidence. Instead, what it should do is they should step back, take a deep breath, be calm, and read the thing. You've got to have a calmness and a sobriety about your investment decisions. You talk about overconfidence, and you say overconfidence bias leads investors to overestimate their knowledge and underestimate risks. Go on from there, please.
And that's exactly it. When you have an investor that decides that they've read that news article or that headline, sometimes you can tell that they haven't read the entire thing. And
exactly.
I'll go into overconfidence. But Magnus Haystack speaks about what's happened, you know, speaks about South Africa, and he sees some green shoots in South Africa. And I'll get clients that say, well, now that Magnus sees South Africa positive, are we going to move some of our money back? And then I knew that they haven't read the article, because Magnus is speaking about actions, you know, not words. He wants to see actions, which we all want to see. It's not just about words. There are things in place that can certainly make this country really steer it in the right direction, but we need action. So it's the same thing when those clients are seeing headlines, but there's many headlines. As they say, bad normally sells. So you'll get people that would read a news headline and phone me up and ask what's happening. Meantime, it's not really affecting them, or the opposite. And overconfidence, you know, really leads to the investor reading most of these headlines, listening to most people. They're hearing a common theme, kind of like what we saw when, you know, even it can happen very quickly, like what we saw where the Japanese carry trade happened. And then everybody thinks, okay, well, now it's the end of the world. Let's move out of the stocks, or let's move all into cash and move into gold. So the stock markets, obviously, when you know, you're getting that type of mentality, I always tell people, just to also answer your question from before, how do we handle it, that the stock market's designed to transfer money from the impatient to the patient. And if you are overconfident, you'll fall into the trap of being active and trying to time the market. And that's my job, is really to go through that with somebody and to be that psychologist and that educator.
The next paragraph is headed loss aversion. And you say loss aversion, a concept introduced by Daniel Kahneman and Amos Tversky, refers to the tendency for individuals to prefer avoiding losses and being more sensitive to those losses than acquiring equivalent gains. So what they do is they say, well, this thing is losing and I want to stop it losing rather than concentrating on the winners. And I can't remember what interview it was. It was very recent though. And I said, my attitude has always been, I got it wrong. I'm going to dump my losses and concentrate on my profitable positions and see why they're profitable and learn from my losses. That's just me though. What is your experience with clients and loss aversion?
You're 100% right. And I tell clients at the same time to make sure, and I mention it later, well, it's one of my tips is understand what, you know, write down, so here are my tips. If it's shares that you're buying, why did you buy that share? Write down 5 reasons for why you bought that share. And once that share goes down, it might not be any other reason than just normal market movement. Go through again, why are the 5 reasons? If any of those reasons have changed significantly, then it's time to sell the share and keep to that strategy. That's when you write a book for yourself, a journal. You keep, if I bought ShopRite, this is why I bought ShopRite. Reason 1, 2, 3, or 4, or 5, or NVIDIA, whatever the share is. Has that changed? What are the reasons environmentally that they've changed? And if that's not for you, then you buy, you know, a unit trust or an exchange traded fund, and you try and be very much diversified so you don't have to make those decisions, which again can also lead investors to thinking, okay, well, that unit trust has gone down, but then that's my job to explain, well, it's gone down because of X, Y, and Z, but it's actually well diversified. So yes, again, the big money, you know, is not in the buying and the selling, but it's actually in the waiting. And you can't wait too long for these, for the losers, but that's more for share portfolio, for shares, people buying shares. You know, make sure you know those 5 reasons you bought the share.
It's a very interesting thing because I've heard exactly the same thing over a number of years from one particular interviewee of mine who's hugely respected and hugely experienced. And he says that every week, Lindsay, I sit down, look at my portfolio and say, has anything changed in the fundamentals of the stocks that I hold on behalf of my clients and myself? And if something has changed, then I re-look at it. And exactly what you're saying. So you're wise beyond your years, Aaron.
Oh, thank you.
Herding is the next one. If everyone wants to follow the crowd, you're having a braai or a dinner party or a cocktail party, whatever it is, and somebody's saying, well, you know, I did so well on this and I did so well on that, and I heard that Jim is doing this and Bob has done so well on that. And you think, oh, gosh, I'm feeling left out here. The fear of missing out is part of the herding process, Aaron.
Exactly. That's when I start to get worried. It really leads to fear and greed. When people really much, and it's the same thing that happened in 2021, towards the end of 21, the dot-com bubble, the late 90s, 2008 crash. 2008 crash was more about, you know, you can't bet against the housing market. That was such a herding mentality. Dot-com bubbles, you could just invest in anything with a dot-com. People would tell you how you'd make money. I mean, it was just too easy. And it's those are the prime things to look for. 2021 happened just because of stimulus and the treasury buying bonds and, you know, money printing. It was so easy to make money and everybody was just saying the same thing. And the herding mentality, therefore, you know, led to 2022 where things crashed. And those are the four most dangerous words in investing are this time is different. You know, don't worry about that. There's always that same fear and greed and the same values and the same things that drive that. And that's why I said to my client, you've already got the exposure to these companies. You don't need to buy the FANG AI, because how would you feel if the if the fund went down 32%, which it did in 2022. You know, it's all about luck at the end of the day. You could have invested in that fund in 2022 and been down 32%, or you could have invested it in 2023 and been up 95%. Those two people have very different psychological factors driving them. And that's the interesting part about the world of behavior.
Information overload. And I must say that I've reined back on my podcast because there's simply too much information. I get too many people saying, this is an interview idea for you, for your podcast. And I think, well, actually, I don't know. And as a consumer, rather than a broadcaster, if I look at one story and I go onto X or I trawl through a couple of internet sites, news sites, websites, and I see three that say one thing and they all concur, and three that say exactly the opposite. And depending on how they're written, is that's the one that really, really convinces me. It's the way that they phrase it in English. That, to me, is the most compelling. But there's always an opposite side to it. So I don't know how people disseminate information and make their decisions based on so much clutter, Aaron.
That's why I say paradoxically, it just leads to worse behavior, worse decision-making. One would think it would be more and more improved and better decision-making with all of the content you have available, whether it's through podcasts or websites, etc. I mean, I would just say listen to a really – it's like investing in a good fund manager, somebody with a very good history, has been through all the downs, been through all the ups. Same with your news. Follow somebody that is very reputable, that's been through the ups and through the downs. Listen to Lindsay Williams and David Shapiro. Listen to people overseas that you enjoy. Those people have been around, and you don't have to swap and change between new websites, etc. That's the first thing. And second thing is obviously understanding that, you know, the information overload is something you should actually ignore the noise over. Tony Bell, one of our fund managers, an incredible fund manager, does not have a TV, does not own a TV. And that's quite impressive. So he doesn't have to worry about that. And he sticks to his strategy. And so should every investor. If they're doing it themselves or through a financial advisor, stick to your strategy. One of the greatest managers does not have a TV.
Well, how does he watch sport? How does he watch football? Anyway, that's another matter. I'm going off topic. Okay. Under your headline, Striving for Rationality, you give four strategies that could help the hapless investor. So please go through them, one to four, please, Aaron.
So briefly, and mentioned earlier, when a client calls in me like they did and they don't understand how stocks behave during different economic cycles, you've got an interest rate increasing cycle, decreasing, high inflation, low inflation. You won't understand how a stock can behave during those times, such as tech, which is really valued much higher based on lower interest rates. They don't look at that. They'll look at the headline or they'll look at the returns. So education and self-reflection is the first one. Understanding those biases is the first step to mitigating the impact of that. Understanding, maybe speaking to your financial advisor, understanding why we diversify across different styles of stocks, not just growth, but also value and quality type of shares. And then, you know, reflecting on what you've done by writing a journal. You know, writing why are you buying a stock if you're doing that for yourself? Like I said, those five ways, and also just reflecting on what you did wrong. Now you've lost where you should have remained invested. What did you do? How did you feel? Journal that. The second one is, you know, a long-term strategy. Investing is, there's only one thing, and like I said, it's the transfer of patience, the impatient to the patient. There is no other ingredient other than sitting on your hands and waiting and sticking to the strategy. Don't be impulsive, especially with all the information. So watch sport. But you don't need to watch the news and watch all of the headlines. Then the third thing is diversification and risk management. Diversification, I've just mentioned it already, understanding how stocks are built, how they behave. One of the greatest things I heard, I don't know where I heard it from, but it was one of the podcasts I listened to overseas where he said true diversification is actually learning to dislike part of your portfolio. Because the whole point of diversification is for certain asset classes to outperform others. And that relates to the cycle we're in at that particular point of time, whether it be a high inflationary, high debt, low debt, it doesn't matter. Where we are, certain stocks will outperform. If there's a war, gold will outperform. But when there's and when there's high interest rates, gold will underperform. We won't speak about now, but the point is, you know, there are certain times where you are holding each and every asset class and asset for that particular reason. And then seeking professional advice, because somebody could be listening to this and has no idea what we're saying, or is looking to get advice and coached on their biases and really understanding investing. And that's where, you know, seeking the help of somebody as your coach or as your psychologist, which is what we are more than fund managers to do.
Okay. The conclusion is that investing successfully, you say, requires more than just market knowledge. It necessitates an understanding of human psychology. Half the time, I would imagine that chap or that woman that phoned you on that morning on a crisp Johannesburg day while you're enjoying your cappuccino just wanted to chat, actually. People have, especially retirees, have too much time on their hands and they want to talk to somebody and they want to fiddle. They want to fiddle with their portfolios because they've just seen something and a light bulb has gone off in their head and you just have to sit down. So you have a great responsibility, you and your colleagues at Brenthurst Wealth, Aaron.
Absolutely great responsibility we have. And, you know, we always say, we always say the most important thing an investor needs is temperament, not intellect. That's actually that's a quote that I framed. And we always say that because explaining, educating, and really starting from the fundamentals will actually give that person such greater respect for you and your craft, you know, where they didn't understand that before. You know, holding somebody's hand down the journey is more important than the end. And, you know, when you hold their hand down the journey and you explain to them how things work and you become almost their partner, that's when you've done your job as a wealth manager. And that's when you can feel good about what you've done. So when I received that call, luckily I like this person. So we had a nice chat.
Very good. And I'm sure you smoothed over the choppy waters of his thought processes. Aaron, that was a really good chat. Thank you very much, as always. Aaron Ruttenberg is from Brenthurst Wealth, and that was It's My Money. It's My Money was brought to you by Brenthurst Wealth, an award-winning boutique wealth management company.